As slowly as a man in a dream, Penny backed away. The rattles sung. They were not rattles. Surely it was a locust humming. Surely it was a tree frog singing. Penny lifted his gun to his shoulder and fired. Jody quivered. The rattler coiled and writhed in its spasms. The head was buried in the sand. The contortions moved down the length of the thick body. The rattles whirred feebly and were still. The coiling flattened into slow convolutions, like a low tide ebbing. Penny turned and stared at his son. He said, "He got me." He lifted his right arm and gaped at it. His lips lifted dry over his teeth. His throat worked. He looked dully at two punctures in the flesh. A drop of blood oozed from each. He said, "He was a big'un." Jody let go hold on Rip. The dog ran to the dead snake and barked fiercely. He made sorties and at last poked the coils with one paw. He quieted and snuffed about in the sand. Penny lifted his head from his staring. His face was like hickory ashes. He said, "Old Death gonna get me yet." He licked his lips. He turned abruptly and began to push through the scrub in the direction of the clearing. The road would be shorter going, for it was open, but he headed blindly for home in a direct line. He plowed through the low scrub oaks, the gallberries, and scrub palmettos. Jody panted behind him. His heart pounded so hard that he couldn't see where he was going. He followed the sound of his father's crashing across the undergrowth. Suddenly the denseness ended. A patch of higher oaks made a shaded clearing. It was strange to walk in silence. Penny stopped short. There was a stirring ahead. A doe deer leaped to her feet. Penny drew a deep breath, as though breathing were for some reason easier. He lifted his shotgun and leveled it at the head. It flashed over Jody's mind that his father had gone mad. This was no moment to stop for game. Penny fired. The doe turned a somersault and dropped to the sand, and kicked a little and lay still. Penny ran to the body and drew his knife from its scabbard. Now Jody knew his father was insane. Penny didn't cut the throat, but slashed into the belly. He laid the carcass wide open. The pulse still throbbed in the heart. Penny slashed out the liver. Kneeling, he changed his knife to his left hand. He turned his right arm and stared again at the twin punctures. They were now closed. The forearm was thick, swollen, and blackening. The sweat stood out on his forehead. He cut quickly across the wound. A dark blood gushed, and he pressed the warm liver against the incision. He said in a hushed voice, "I can feel it draw." He pressed harder. He took the meat away and looked at it. It was a venomous green. He turned it and applied the fresh side. He said, "Cut me out a piece of the heart." Jody jumped from his paralysis. He fumbled with a knife. He hacked away a portion. Penny said, "Another." He changed the application again and again. He said, "Hand me the knife." He cut a higher gash in his arm where the dark swelling rose the thickest. Jody cried out, "Pa, you'll bleed to death."
"I'd rather bleed to death than swell. I seed a man die."
The sweat poured down his cheeks.
"Do it hurt bad, Pa?"
"Like a hot knife was buried to the shoulder."
The meat no longer showed green when he withdrew it. The warm vitality of the doe's flesh was solidifying in death. He stood up. He said quietly,
"I can't do it no more good. I'm going on home. You go to the foresters and get 'em to ride to the branch for Doc Wilson."
"Reckon they'll go?"
"We got to chance it. Call out to 'em quick, saying, afore they chunk something at you, or maybe shoot."
He turned back to pick up the beaten trail. Jody followed. Over his shoulder, he heard a light rustling. He looked back. A spotted fawn stood peering from the edge of the clearing, wavering on uncertain legs. Its dark eyes were wide and wondering. He called out,
"Pa, the doe's got a fawn."
"Sorry, boy. I can't help it. Come on."
An agony for the fawn came over him. He hesitated. It tossed its small head, bewildered. It wobbled to the carcass of the doe and leaned to smell it. It bleated. Penny called,
"Get a move on, young'un."
Jody ran to catch up with him. Penny stopped an instant at the dim road.
"Tell somebody to take this road into our place and pick me up in case I can't make it in. Hurry!"
The horror of his father's body, swollen in the road, washed over him. He began to run. His father was plodding with a slow desperation in the direction of Baxter's Island. Jody ran down the wagon trail to the Myrtle Thicket, where it branched off into the main road to Forrester's Island. The road, much used, had no growth of weeds or grass to make a footing. The dry, shifting sand caught at the soles of his feet and seemed to wrap clinging tentacles around the muscles of his legs. He dropped into a short dog trot that seemed to pull more steadily against the sand. His legs moved, but his mind and body seemed suspended above them, like an empty box on a pair of cartwheels. The road under him was a treadmill, his legs pumped up and down, but he seemed to be passing the same trees and bushes again and again. His pace seemed so slow, so futile, that he came to a bend with a dull surprise. The curve was familiar. He was not far from the road that led directly into the Forrester clearing. He came to the tall trees of the island. They startled him, because they meant that he was now so close. He came alive, and he was afraid. He was afraid of the Forresters. And if they refused him help, and he got safely away again, where should he go? He halted a moment under the shadowy live oaks, planning. It was twilight. He was sure it was not time for darkness. The rain clouds were not clouds, but an infusion of the sky, and had now filled it entirely. The only light was a strand of green across the west, the color of the doe's flesh with the venom on it. It came to him that he would call to his friend Fodderwing. His friend would hear him and come, and he might be allowed to approach close enough to tell his errand. It eased his heart to think of it, to think of his friend's eyes gentle with sorrow for him. He drew a long breath and ran wildly down the path under the oak trees. He shouted,
"Fodderwing! Fodderwing! It's Jody!"
In an instant now his friend would come to join him from the house, crawling down the rickety steps on all fours as he must do when in a hurry, or he would appear from the bushes with his raccoon at his heels.
"Fodderwing! It's me!"
There was no answer. He broke into the swept sandy yard.
"Fodderwing!"
There was an early light lit in the house. A twist of smoke curled from the chimney. The doors and shutters were closed against the mosquitoes and against the nighttime. The door swung open. In the light beyond, he saw the Forrester men rise to their feet, one after the other, as though the great trees in the forest lifted themselves by their roots and stirred toward him. He stopped short. Lem Forrester advanced to the stoop. He lowered his head and turned it a little sideways until he recognized the intruder.
"You little varmint, what you after here?"
Jody faltered.
"Fodderwing?"
"He's ailin'. You can't see him no ways."
It was too much. He burst out crying. He sobbed.
"Pa! He's snake bit."
The Forresters came down the steps and surrounded him. He sobbed loudly, with pity for himself and for his father, and because he was here at last and something was finished that he had set out to do. There was a stirring among the men, as though the leavening quickened in a bowl of bread dough.
"Where's he at? What kind of snake?"
"A rattlesnake, a big un. He's making it for home, but he don't know can he make it."
"Is he swelling? Where'd he get him?"
"In the arm. It's bad swelled already. Please ride for Doc Wilson. Please ride for him quick, and I won't help Oliver again, you know more. Please."
Lem Forrester laughed.
"A skeeter promises he won't bite," he said.
Buck said,
"It's not like to do no good. A man dies right now, bit in the arm. He'll likely be dead afore Doc can get to him."
"He shot a doe deer and used the liver to draw out the pison. Please, ride for Doc."
Millwheel said, I'll ride for him. Relief flooded him like the sun.
I sure thank you.
I'd help a dog with snake bit. Spare your thanks. Buck said,
I'll ride on, pick up Penny. Walking's bad for a man to snake bit. My God, fellers, we ain't got a drop of whiskey for him.
Gabby said, Old Doc'll have some. If he's pretty tolerable sober, he'll have some left.
If he's drunk all he's got, he can blow his breath, and that'll make a powerful portion.
Buck and Millwheel turned away with torturing deliberation to the lot to saddle their horses.
Their leisureliness frightened Jody, as speed would not have done.
If there was hope for his father, they would be hurrying. They were as slow and unconcerned as though they were burying Penny, not riding for assistance. He stood, desolate. He would like to see Fodderwing just a moment before he went away. The remaining foresters turned back up the steps, ignoring him. Lem called from the door,
Get going, Skeeter.
Arch said,
Leave the young and bait old torment him and his daddy likely dying.
Lem said,
Dying, good riddance. Biggity bantam.
They went into the house and closed the door. A panic came over Jody, that they didn't mean any of them to help at all, and Buck and Millwheel had gone away to the corral for a joke and were laughing at him there. He was forsaken, and his father was forsaken. Then the two men rode out, and Buck lifted his hand to him, not unkindly.
No use fret, boy. We'll do what we can. We don't hold nothing against folks in trouble.
They touched their heels to the horse's flanks and shot away. Lightness filled him where he had been heavy as lead. It was only Lem then who was an enemy. He settled his hate on him with satisfaction. He listened until the hoofbeats faded from his hearing, then set out down the road for home. Now he was free to accept the facts. A rattlesnake had struck his father, who might die of it, but help was on the way, and he had done what he was supposed to do.
His fear had a name, and was no longer quite so terrible.
He decided not to try to run, but to walk steadily. He should have liked to ask the loan of a horse for himself, but dared not. A pattering of rain passed over him. A hush followed. The storm might go around the scrub entirely, as often happened. There was a faint luminosity in the air around him. He had scarcely been conscious that he was carrying his father's gun. He swung it over one shoulder and walked rapidly where the road was firm. He wondered how long it would take Millwheel to reach the branch. He wondered not whether old Doc would be drunk, for that was known, but just how drunk he would be. If Doc could sit up in bed, he was considered fit to go. He had been at Doc's place once when he was very young. He remembered still the sprawling house with wide verandas decaying, as old Doc was decaying, in the heart of a dense vegetation. He remembered the cockroaches and the lizards as much at home inside the house as in the thick vines outside it. He remembered old Doc, deep in his cups, lying under a mosquito canopy, staring at the ceiling. When he was called, he sprawled to his feet and went about his business on uncertain legs, but with gentle heart and hands. He was known far and wide as a good doctor, drunk or no. If he could be reached in time, Jody thought, his father's life was certain. He turned from the forester's lane into the road that ran east to his father's clearing. He had 4 miles ahead of him. On hard ground, he could make it in little over an hour. The sand was soft, and the very darkness seemed to hold him back and make his steps uneven. He would do well to reach home in an hour and a half, and it might take 2. He broke now and then into a trot. The brightness in the air dropped into the darkness of the scrub like a water turkey dropping into the river. The growth on either side of the road pressed closer so that the way was narrow. He heard thunder in the east, and a flash of lightning filled the sky. He thought he heard footsteps in the scrub oaks, but it was drops of rain striking like shot on the leaves. He had never minded night or darkness, but Penny had always been in front of him. Now he was alone.
He wondered, sickened, whether his father lay now in the road ahead of him, swollen with poison, or perhaps across Buck's saddle, if Buck had reached and found him. The lightning flashed again. He had sat with his father through many storms under the live oaks. The rain had then been friendly, shutting them in together. A snarl sounded in the bushes. Something incredibly swift flashed across the road in front of him and was gone, soundlessly. A musky taint lay in the air. He wasn't afraid of lynx or wildcat, but a panther had been known to attack a horse. His heart thumped. He fingered the stock of his father's gun. It was useless, for Penny had shot both barrels, one at the rattler, one at the doe. He had his father's knife in his belt, and wished he had brought the long knife Oliver had given him. He had no scabbard for it, and it was dangerously sharp, Penny had said, to carry. When he was safe at home, lying under the grape arbor, or at the bottom of the sinkhole, he had pictured himself thrusting it with one sure plunge into the heart of bear or wolf or panther. There was no flush of pride now in the picture. A panther's claws were quicker than he. Whatever the animal, it had gone its way. He walked more rapidly, stumbling in his haste. He thought he heard a wolf howl, but it was so far away that it might only have been the wind. The wind was rising. He heard it far off in the distance. It was as though it were blowing in another world, across a dark abyss. Suddenly, it swelled. He heard it coming closer, like a moving wall. The trees ahead thrashed their limbs. The bushes rattled and flattened to the ground. There was a great roaring, and the storm hit him like a blow. He lowered his head and fought against it. He was drenched to the skin in an instant. The rain poured down the back of his neck and washed through his breeches. His clothes hung heavily and held him back. He stopped and turned his back to the wind and propped the gun at the side of the road. He took off his shirt and breeches and rolled them into a bundle. He took up the gun and went on naked through the storm. The rain on his bare skin made him feel clean and free. The lightning flashed and he was startled by his own whiteness. He felt suddenly defenseless. He was alone and naked in an unfriendly world, lost and forgotten in the storm and darkness. Something ran behind him and ahead of him. It stalked the scrub like a panther. It was vast and formless, and it was his enemy. Old Death was loose in the scrub. It came to him that his father was already dead or dying. The burden of the thought was intolerable. He ran faster to shake it off. Penny could not die. Dogs could die, and bears and deer and other people. That was acceptable because it was remote. His father could not die. The earth might cave in under him in one vast sinkhole, and he could accept it. But without Penny, there was no earth. Without him, there was nothing. He was frightened as he had never been before. He began to sob. His tears ran salt into his mouth. He begged of the night as he had begged of the foresters. Please. His throat ached and his groins were shot with hot lead. The lightning showed an opening ahead of him. He had reached the abandoned clearing. He darted into it and crouched against the old rail fence for a moment's shelter. The wind washed over him more coldly than the rain. He shivered and rose and went on again. The stop had chilled him. He wanted to run to warm himself, but he had strength only to plod slowly. The rain had packed the sand so that the walking was firm and easier. The wind lessened. The downpour settled into a steady falling. He walked on in a dull misery. It seemed to him that he must walk forever, but suddenly he was passing the sinkhole and was at the clearing. The Baxter cabin was bright with candles. Horses whinnied and pawed the sand. There were three tethered to the slat fence. He passed through the gate and into the cabin. Whatever was done. There was no bustle to greet him. Buck and Millwheel sat by the empty hearth, tilted back in their chairs. They were talking casually.
They glanced at him and said, "Hey, boy," and went on with their talk.
"You wasn't here, Buck, when old man Twistle died a snake bite. Penny must have been right about whiskey not doing the good. Twistle were drunk as a coot when he stepped on the rattler."
"Well, do I ever get snake bit, fill me full just for luck. I'd rather die drunk than sober every day."
Millwheel spat into the fireplace.
"Don't fret," he said. "You will."
Jody was faint. He dared not ask them the question. He walked past them and into his father's bedroom. His mother sat on one side of the bed, and Doc Wilson sat on the other. Old Doc didn't turn his head. His mother looked at him and rose without speaking. She went to a dresser and took out a fresh shirt and breeches and held them out to him. He dropped his wet bundle and stood the gun against the wall. He walked slowly to the bed. He thought, if he's not dead now, he'll not die. In the bed, Penny stirred. Jody's heart leaped like a rabbit jumping. Penny groaned and retched. Doc leaned quickly and held a basin for him and propped his head. Penny's face was dark and swollen. He vomited with the agony of one who has nothing to emit but must vomit still. He fell back panting. Doc reached inside the covers and drew out a brick wrapped in flannel. He handed it to Ma Baxter. She laid Jody's garments at the foot of the bed and went to the kitchen to heat the brick again. Jody whispered,
"Is he bad?"
"He's bad, all right. Looks as if he'd make it, then again, looks as if he won't."
Penny opened his puffed eyes. The pupils were dilated until his eyes seemed black. He moved his arm. It was swollen as thick as a bullock's thigh. He murmured thickly,
"You'll catch cold."
Jody fumbled for his clothes and pulled them on. Doc nodded.
"That's a good sign, knowing you. That's the first he's spoken."
A tenderness filled Jody that was half pain, half sweetness. In his agony, his father was concerned for him. Penny couldn't die, not Penny. He said,
"He's obliged to make it, Doc, sir," he added, as he had heard his father say, "us Baxters is all runty and tough."
Doc nodded. He called to the kitchen.
"Let's try some warm milk now."
With hope, Ma Baxter began to sniffle. Jody joined her at the hearth. She whimpered.
"I don't see as we deserve it. Do it happen?"
He said,
"It'll not happen, Ma."
But his marrow was cold again. He went outside for wood to hurry the fire. The storm was moving on to the west. The clouds were rolling like battalions of marching Spaniards. In the east, bright spaces showed, filled with stars. The wind blew fresh and cool. He came in with an armful of fat wood. He said,
"It'll be a purty day tomorrow, Ma. It'll be a purty day if he's yet alive when day comes."
She burst into tears. They dropped on the hearth and hissed. She lifted her apron and wiped her eyes.
"You take the milk in," she said. "I'll make Doc and me a cup of tea. I hadn't et nothing, waiting for y'all when Buck carried him in."
He remembered that he had eaten lightly. He could think of nothing that would taste good. The thought of food on his tongue was a dry thought, without nourishment or relish. He carried the cup of hot milk, carefully balancing it in his hands. Doc took it from him and sat close to Penny on the bed.
"Now, boy, you hold his head up while I spoon-feed him."
Penny's head was heavy on the pillow. Jody's arms ached with the strain of lifting it. His father's breathing was heavy, like the foresters when they were drunk. His face had changed color. It was green and pallid like a frog's belly. At first, his teeth resisted the intruding spoon. Doc said,
"Open your mouth before I call the foresters to open it."
The swollen lips parted. Penny swallowed. A portion of the cupful went down.
He turned his head away. Doc said,
"All right, but if you lose it, I'm coming back with more."
Penny broke into a sweat. Doc said,
"That's fine. Sweating's fine for poison. Lord of the Jaybirds, if we weren't all out of whiskey, I'd make you sweat."
Ma Baxter came to the bedroom with two plates with cups of tea and biscuits on them. Doc took his plate and balanced it on his knee. He drank with a mixture of gusto and distaste. He said,
"It's all right, but 'tain't whiskey."
He was the soberest Jody had ever heard of his being.
"A good man's snake bit," he said mournfully, "and the whole county out of whiskey."
Ma Baxter said dully,
"Jody, you want something? I ain't hungry."
His stomach was as queasy as his father's. It seemed to him that he could feel the poison working in his own veins, attacking his heart, churning in his gizzard. Doc said,
"Blessed if he ain't going to keep that milk down."
Penny was in a deep sleep. Ma Baxter rocked and sipped and nibbled. She said,
"The Lord watches the sparrows fall. Mount B, he'll take a hand for the Baxters."
Jody went into the front room. Buck and Millwheel had lain down on the deerskin rugs on the floor. Jody said,
"Ma and Doc's eating. Y'all hungry?"
Buck said,
"Wait just down that when you come. Don't pay us no mind. We'll sleep here and wait to see how it comes out."
Jody crouched on his heels. He would have liked to talk with him. It would be good to talk of dogs and guns and hunting, of all the things that living men could do. Buck snored. Jody tiptoed back to the bedroom. Doc was nodding in his chair. His mother moved the candle from the bedside and returned to her rocker. The runners swished a while and then were still. She too nodded. It seemed to Jody that he was alone with his father. The vigil was in his hands. If he kept awake and labored for breath with the tortured sleeper, breathing with him and for him, he could keep him alive. He drew a breath as deep as the ones his father was drawing. It made him dizzy. He was lightheaded and his stomach was empty. He knew he would feel better if he should eat, but he couldn't swallow. He sat down on the floor and leaned his head against the side of the bed. He began to think back over the day, as though he walked a road backward. He couldn't help but feel a greater security here beside his father than in the stormy night. Many things, he realized, would be terrible alone that were not terrible when he was with Penny. Only the rattlesnake had kept all its horror. He recalled the triangular head, the lightning flash of it striking, the subsidence into alert coils. His flesh crawled. It seemed to him he should never be easy in the woods again. He recalled the coolness of his father's shot and the fear of the dogs. He recalled the doe and the horror of her warm meat against his father's wound. He remembered the fawn. He sat upright. The fawn was alone in the night as he had been alone. The catastrophe that might take his father had made it motherless. It had lain hungry and bewildered through the thunder and rain and lightning, close to the devastated body of its dam, waiting for the stiff form to arise and give it warmth and food and comfort. He pressed his face into the hanging covers of the bed and cried bitterly. He was torn with hate for all death and pity for all aloneness. Chapter 15. Jody moved through a tortuous dream. With his father beside him, he fought a nest of rattlesnakes. They crawled across his feet, trailing their rattles, clacking lightly. The nest resolved itself into one snake, gigantic, moving toward him on a level with his face. It struck, and he tried to scream, but couldn't. He looked for his father. He lay under the rattler, with his eyes open to a dark sky, His body was swollen to the size of a bear. He was dead. Jody began to move backward away from the rattler, one agonized step at a time. His feet were glued to the ground. The snake suddenly vanished, and he stood alone in a vast, windy place, holding the fawn in his arms. Penny was gone. A sense of sorrow filled him so that he thought his heart would break. He awakened, sobbing. He sat up on the hard floor. Day was breaking over the clearing. A pale light lay in streaks beyond the pine trees. The room was filled with grayness. For an instant he was still conscious of the fawn against him. Then he remembered. He scrambled to his feet and looked at his father. Penny was breathing with a greater ease. He was still swollen and fevered, but he looked no worse than when the wild honeybees had stung him. Ma Baxter was asleep in a rocker with her head thrown far back. Old Doc lay across the foot of the bed. Jody whispered,
"Doc?"
Doc grunted and lifted his head.
What is it? What is it? What is it?
"Doc, look at Pa."
Doc shifted his body and eased himself on one elbow. He blinked and rubbed his eyes. He sat up. He leaned over Penny.
"Lord of the Jaybirds? He's made it."
Ma Baxter said,
"Huh?"
She sat upright.
"He dead?"
"Not by a long sight."
She burst out crying. Doc said,
"You sound like you're sorry."
She said,
"You just don't know what 'twould mean, him leaving us here."
Jody had never heard her speak so gently. Doc said,
"Why, you got another man here. Look at Jody now, big enough to plow and reap and do the hunting."
She said,
"Jody's all right, but he ain't a thing but boy. Got his mind on nothing but prowling and playing."
He hung his head. It was true. She said,
"His paw encourages him."
Doc said,
"Well, boy, be glad you got encouragement. Most of us live our lives without it. Now, ma'am, let's get some more milk down this feller. Time he wakes."
Jody said eagerly,
"I'll go milk, Ma."
She said with satisfaction,
"About time."
He passed through the front room. Buck was sitting up on the floor, rubbing his head sleepily. Millwheel was still asleep. Jody said,
"Doc says Pa's done made it."
"I be dogged. I woked up fixing to go bury him."
Jody went around the side of the house and took down the milk gourd from the wall. He felt as light as the gourd. It seemed to him in his liberation that he might spread his arms and float over the gate like a feather. The dawn was still nebulous. A mockingbird made a thin metallic sound in the chinaberry. The Dominic rooster crowed uncertainly. This was the hour at which Penny arose, allowing Jody to sleep a little later. The morning was still, with a faint fluttering of breeze through the tops of the tall pine trees. The sunrise reached long fingers into the clearing. As he clicked the lot gate, doves flew from the pines with a whistling of wings. He called exultantly after them,
"Hey, doves!"
Trixie lowed, hearing him. He climbed into the loft for fodder for her. She was very patient, he thought, giving her milk in return for so poor a feeding. She munched hungrily. She lifted a hind leg once in threat when he was clumsy with the milking. He stripped two teats carefully, then turned the calf in with her to nurse on the other two. There was not as much milk as his father would have gotten from her. He decided that he would drink none himself so that his father might have all of it until he was well again. The calf butted the sagging udders and sucked noisily. It was too big still to be nursing. The thought of the fawn returned to him. A leaden feeling came over him again. It would be desperate with hunger this morning. He wondered if it would try to nurse the cold teats of the doe. The open flesh of the dead deer would attract the wolves. Perhaps they had found the fawn, and had torn its soft body to ribbons. His joy in the morning, in his father's living, was darkened and tainted. His mind followed the fawn, and wouldn't be comforted. His mother took the milk gourd without comment on the quantity. She strained the milk and poured a cupful and took it to the sick room. He followed her. Penny was awake. He smiled weakly. He whispered thickly,
"Oh, death got to wait a while on me."
Doc said,
"You belong to be kin to the rattlesnakes, man. How you done it without whiskey, I don't know."
Penny whispered,
"Why, Doc, I'm a king snake. You know a rattler can't kill a king snake."
Buck and Millwheel came into the room. They grinned. Buck said,
"You ain't purty, Penny, but by God, you're alive."
Doc held the milk to Penny's lips. He swallowed thirstily. Doc said,
"I can't take much credit for saving you. Your time just hadn't come to make a die of it."
Penny closed his eyes. He said,
"I could sleep a week."
Doc said,
"That's what I want you to do. I can't do no more for you."
He stood up and stretched his legs. Ma Baxter said,
"Who would do the farming and him asleep?"
Buck said,
"Well, what's he got belongs to be done."
"Mostly the corn needs another working to be laid by. The taters needs hoeing, but Jody's right good at hoeing, do we choose to stick to it." "I'll stick, Ma."
Buck said,
"I'll stay and work the corn and such."
She was flustered. She said stiffly,
"I hates to be beholden to you."
"Hell, ma'am, there ain't too many of us shifting for a living out here. I'd be a poor man didn't I not stay."
She said meekly,
"I'm sure obliged. If the corn don't make, we'd just as good all three to die a snake bite."
Doc said,
"This is as sober as I've waked up since my wife died. I'd be proud to eat breakfast before I go."
She bustled to the kitchen. Jody went to build up the fire. She said,
"I never figured I'd be beholden to a forester." "Well, Buck ain't exactly a forester, Ma. Buck's a friend." "It do look that away."
She filled the coffee pot with water and added fresh coffee to the grounds. She said,
"Go to the smokehouse and get that last side of bacon. I'll not be outdone."
He brought it proudly. She allowed him to slice the meat. He said,
"Ma, Pa shot a doe and used the liver to draw out the pison. He bled hisself and then laid on the liver. You should have carried back a haunch of the meat. There wasn't no time to figure on such as that." "That's right, too. Ma, the doe had a fawn."
"Well, most does has fawns."
"This one was right young, nigh about newborn."
"Well, what about it? Go set the table. Lay out the briarberry jelly. The butter's right strong, but it's yit butter. Lay it out, too."
She was stirring up a corn pone. The fat was sizzling in the skillet. She poured in the batter. The bacon crackled in the pan. She turned and flattened the slices so that they would brown evenly. He wondered if they would ever be able to fill up Buck and Millwheel, accustomed to the copiousness of forester victuals. He said,
"Make a heap of gravy, Ma."
"If you'll do without your milk, I'll make milk gravy."
The sacrifice was nothing. He said,
"We could have killed a chicken. I studied on it, but they're all too young or too old."
She turned the corn pone. The coffee began to boil. He said,
"I could have shot some doves or some squirrels this morning. A fine time to think of it. Go tell the men folks to wash themselves and come to table."
He called them. The three men went outside to the water shelf and slapped water over their faces, dabbled their hands. He brought them a clean towel. Doc said,
"Blessed if I don't get hungry when I'm sober."
Millwheel said,
"Whiskey's food. I could live on whiskey."
Doc said,
"I've near about done it 20 years since my wife died."
Jody was proud of the table. There were not as many different dishes as the foresters served, but there was enough of everything. The men ate greedily. At last, they pushed away their plates and lit their pipes. Millwheel said,
"Seems like a Sunday, don't it?"
Ma Baxter said,
Sickness allus do seem like sun to some way. Folks settin' around, the men not goin' to the field.
Jody had never seen her so amiable. She had waited to eat until the men were done for fear of their not having plenty. She sat now eating with relish. The men chatted idly. Jody allowed his thoughts to drift back to the fawn. He couldn't keep it out of his mind. It stood in the back of it as close as he had held it, in his dreaming, in his arms. He slipped from the table and went to his father's bedside. Penny lay at rest. His eyes were open and clear, but the pupils were still dark and dilated. Jody said,
"How you coming, Paul?"
"Just fine, son. Old Death gone thieving elsewhere. But wasn't it a close squeak?"
"I mean..."
Penny said,
"I'm proud of you, boy, the way you kept your head and done what was needed."
"Pa?"
"Yes, son."
"Pa, you recollect the doe and the fawn?"
"I can't never forget 'em. My poor doe saved me, and that's certain."
"Pa, the fawn may be out there yet. It's hungry, and likely mighty scared."
"I reckon so."
"Pa, I'm about growed and don't need no milk. How about me going out and seeing can I find the fawn?"
"And tote it here?"
"And raise it."
Penny lay quiet, staring at the ceiling.
"Boy, you got me hemmed in."
"It won't take much to raise it, Pa. It'll soon get to where it can make out on leaves and acorns."
"Dogged if you don't figure the farthest a very young'un I've ever knowed."
"We'd taken its mammy, and it wasn't no ways to blame."
"Sure don't seem grateful to leave it starved, do it?" "Son, I ain't got it in my heart to say no to you. I never figured I'd see daylight come dawn today."
"Can I ride back with Millwheel and see can I find it?"
"Tell your ma I said you're to go."
He sidled back to the table and sat down. His mother was pouring coffee for everyone. He said,
"Ma, Pa says I can go bring back the fawn."
She held the coffee pot in midair.
"What fawn?" "The fawn belonged to the doe we killed to use the liver to draw out the pies and save Pa."
She gasped.
"Well, for pity's sake. Pa says he'd not be grateful to leave it starve."
Doc Wilson said,
"That's right, ma'am. Nothing in the world don't ever come quite free. The boy's right, and his daddy's right."
Millwheel said,
"He can ride back with me. I'll help him find it."
She set down the pot helplessly.
"Well, if you'll give it your milk, we got nothing else to feed it. That's what I aim to do. It'll be no time, and it not needin' nothing."
The men rose from the table. Doc said,
"I don't look for nothing but progress, ma'am, but if he takes a turn for the worse, you know where to find me."
She said,
"Well, what do we owe you, Doc? We can't pay right now, but time the crops is made."
"Pay for what? I've done nothing. He was safe before I got here. I've had a night's lodging and a good breakfast. Send me some syrup when your cane's ground."
"You're mighty good, Doc. We've been scrambling so. I didn't know folks could be so good."
"Hush, woman. You got a good man there. Why wouldn't folks be good to him?"
Buck said,
"You reckon that old horse of Penny's can keep ahead of me at the plow? I'm like to run him down."
Doc said,
"Get as much milk down, Penny, as he'll take. Then give him greens, fresh meat, if you can get it."
Buck said,
"Me and Jody'll tend to that."
Millwheel said,
"Come on, boy, we got to get ridin'."
Ma Baxter asked anxiously,
"You'll not be gone long?"
Jody said,
"I'll be back sure, before dinner." "Reckon you'd not get home at all," she said, "if it twasn't for dinner time."
Doc said,
"That's man nature, ma'am. Three things bring a man home again: his bed, his woman, and his dinner."
Buck and Millwheel guffawed. Doc's eyes caught the cream-colored coonskin knapsack.
Now, ain't that a pretty something? Wouldn't I like such as that to tote my medicines?
Jody had never before possessed a thing that was worth giving away. He took it from its nail and put it in Doc's hands.
It's mine, he said. Take it.
Why, I'd not rob you, boy.
I got no use for it, he said loftily. I can get me another.
Now, I thank you. Every trip I make, I'll think, thank you, Jody Baxter.
He was proud with old Doc's pleasure. They went outside to water the horses and feed them from the scanty stock of hay in the Baxter barn. Buck said to Jody,
You Baxters is making out, and that's about all, ain't it?
Doc said,
Baxter's had to carry the work alone. Time the boy here gets some size to him, they'll prosper.
Buck said,
Size don't seem to mean much to a Baxter.
Millwheel mounted his horse and pulled Jody up behind him. Doc mounted and turned away in the opposite direction. Jody waved after him. His heart was light. He said to Millwheel,
You reckon the fawn's yit there? Will you help me find him?
We'll find him, do he be alive. How do you know it's a he?
The spots was all in a line. On a doe fawn, Pa says the spots is ever which away.
That's the female of it.
What do you mean?
Why, females is unaccountable.
Millwheel slapped the horse's flank, and they broke into a trot.
This female business. How come you and your Pa to pitch in to us when we was fighting Oliver Hutto?
Oliver was getting the worst of it. It didn't seem right a whole passel of y'all whooping Oliver.
You right.
It were Lem's gal and Oliver's gal. They should have fitted out alone. But a gal can't belong to two fellers that wants it.
You just don't know gals.
I hate Twink Weatherby.
I'd not look at her neither. I got a widder woman at Fort Gates. Knows how to be faithful.
The matter was too complicated. Jody gave himself over to thoughts of the fawn. They passed the abandoned clearing. He said,
Cut to the north, Millwheel. It were up here Pa got snake bit and killed the doe, and I seed the fawn.
What was you and your daddy doing up this road?
Jody hesitated.
We was hunting our hogs.
Oh, hunting your hogs, eh? Well, don't fret about them hogs. I just got an idea they'll be home by sundown.
Ma and Pa sure be proud to see 'em come in.
I had no idea y'all was running so tight.
We ain't running tight. We're all right.
You Baxters got guts. I'll say that.
You reckon Pa'll not die?
Not him. His chitlins is made of iron.
Jody said,
Tell me about Father Wing. Is he sure enough ailin', or didn't Lem want I should see him?
He's purely ailin'. He ain't like the rest of us. He ain't like nobody. Seems like he drinks air instead of water and feeds on what the wild critters feed on instead of bacon.
He sees things ain't so, don't he? Spaniards and sich?
He do. But dogged, if they ain't times, he'll make you think he do see him.
You reckon Lem'll leave me come see him?
I'd not risk it yet. I'll get word to you one day when maybe Lem's gone off, see?
I sure crave to see Father Wing.
You'll see him. Now, whereabouts you want to go, hunting that fawn? It's getting right thick up this trail.
Suddenly, Jody was unwilling to have Millwheel with him. If the fawn was dead or could not be found, he couldn't have his disappointment seen. And if the fawn was there, the meeting would be so lovely and so secret that he couldn't endure to share it. He said,
It's not fur now, but it's powerful thick for a horse. I can make it afoot.
But I'm daresome to leave you, boy. Suppose you'd get lost or snake bit, too.
I'll take care. It'll take me likely a long time to find the fawn if he's wandered. Leave me off right here.
All right. But you go mighty easy now, poking in them palmeters. This is rattlesnake heaven in these parts. You know north here and east?
There and there. That fir-tall pine makes a barren.
That's right. Now, do things go wrong again, you or Buck One, ride back for me. So long. So long, Millwheel. I'm sure obliged.
He waved after him. He waited for the sound of the hooves to end, then cut to the right. The scrub was still. Only his own crackling of twigs sounded across the silence. He was eager, almost past caution. But he broke a bough and pushed it ahead of him where the growth was thick and the ground invisible. Rattlers got out of the way when they had a chance. Penny had gone farther into the oak thicket than he remembered. He wondered for an instant if he had mistaken his direction. Then a buzzard rose in front of him and flapped into the air. He came into the clearing under the oaks. Buzzards sat in a circle around the carcass of the doe. They turned their heads on their long, scrawny necks and hissed at him. He threw his bow at them, and they flew into an adjacent tree. Their wings creaked and whistled like rusty pump handles. The sand showed large cat prints. He couldn't tell whether of wildcat or of panther, but the big cats killed fresh, and they had left the doe to the carrion birds. He asked himself whether the sweeter meat of the fawn had scented the air for the curled nostrils. He skirted the carcass and parted the grass at the place where he had seen the fawn. It didn't seem possible that it was only yesterday. The fawn wasn't there. He circled the clearing. There was no sound, no sign. The buzzards clacked their wings, impatient to return to their business. He returned to the spot where the fawn had emerged and dropped to all fours, studying the sand for the small hoof prints. The night's rain had washed away all tracks except those of cat and buzzards, but the cat sign had not been made in this direction. Under a scrub palmetto, he was able to make out a track, pointed and dainty as the mark of a ground dove. He crawled past the palmetto. Movement directly in front of him startled him, so that he tumbled backwards. The fawn lifted its face to his. It turned its head with a wide, wondering motion and shook him through with the stare of its liquid eyes. It was quivering. It made no effort to rise or run. Jody couldn't trust himself to move. He whispered, "It's me." The fawn lifted its nose, scenting him. He reached out one hand and laid it on the soft neck. The touch made him delirious. He moved forward on all fours until he was close beside it. He put his arms around its body. A slight convulsion passed over it, but it didn't stir. He stroked its sides as gently as though the fawn were a china deer, and he might break it. Its skin was softer than the white coonskin knapsack. It was sleek and clean and had a sweet scent of grass. He rose slowly and lifted the fawn from the ground. It was no heavier than old Julia. Its legs hung limply. They were surprisingly long, and he had to hoist the fawn as high as possible under his arm. He was afraid that it might kick and bleed at sight and smell of its mother. He skirted the clearing and pushed his way into the thicket. It was difficult to fight through with his burden. The fawn's legs caught in the bushes, and he couldn't lift his own with freedom. He tried to shield its face from prickling vines. Its head bobbed with his stride. His heart thumped with the marvel of its acceptance of him. He reached the trail and walked as fast as he could until he came to the intersection with the road home. He stopped to rest and set the fawn down on its dangling legs. It wavered on them. It looked at him and bleated. He said, enchanted, "I'll tote you time I get my breath." He remembered his father saying that a fawn would follow that had been first carried. He started away slowly. The fawn stared after him. He came back to it and stroked it and walked away again. It took a few wobbling steps toward him and cried piteously. It was willing to follow him. It belonged to him. It was his own. He was lightheaded with his joy. He wanted to fondle it, to run and romp with it, to call to it to come to him. He dared not alarm it. He picked it up and carried it in front of him over his two arms. It seemed to him that he walked without effort. He had the strength of a forester. His arms began to ache, and he was forced to stop again. When he walked on, the fawn followed him at once. He allowed it to walk a little distance, then picked it up again. The distance home was nothing. He could have walked all day and into the night carrying it and watching it follow. He was wet with sweat, but a light breeze blew through the June morning, cooling him. The sky was as clear as spring water in a blue china cup. He came to the clearing. It was fresh and green after the night's rain. He could see Buck Forrester following old Caesar at the plow in the cornfield. He thought he heard him curse the horse's slowness. He fumbled with the gate latch and was finally obliged to set down the fawn to manage it. It came to him that he would walk into the house, into Penny's bedroom, with the fawn walking behind him. But at the steps, the fawn balked and refused to climb them. He picked it up and went to his father. Penny lay with closed eyes. Jody called.
Pa, look it.
Penny turned his head. Jody stood beside him, the fawn clutched hard against him. It seemed to Penny that the boy's eyes were as bright as the fawn's. His face lightened seeing them together. He said,
I'm proud you found him.
Pa, he wasn't scared of me. He were lying up right where his mammy had made his bed.
The doe learns them that time they're born. You can step on a fawn times they lay so still.
Pa, I toted him, and when I set him down, right off, he followed me, like a dog, Pa.
Ain't that fine? Let's see him better.
Jody lifted the fawn high. Penny reached out a hand and touched its nose. It bleated and reached hopefully for his fingers. He said,
Well, little feller, I'm sorry I had to take away your mammy.
You reckon he misses her?
No. He misses his rations, and he knows that. He misses something else, but he don't know just what.
Ma Baxter came into the room.
Look, Ma, I found him. I see. Ain't he purty, Ma? Look at them spots, all in rows. Look at them big eyes. Ain't he purty?
He's powerful young. It'll take milk for him a long whiles.
I don't know if I'd give my consent if I'd knowed he was so young.
Penny said,
Ori, I got one thing to say, and I'm saying it now, and then I'll have no more talk of it. The little fawn's as welcome in this house as Jody. It's his'n. We'll raise it without grudgment of milk or meal. You got me to answer to. Do I ever hear you quarreling about it? This is Jody's fawn. Just like Julia's my dog.
Jody had never heard his father speak to her so sternly. The tone must hold familiarity for his mother, however, for she opened and shut her mouth and blinked her eyes. She said,
I only said it was young.
All right, so it is.
He closed his eyes. He said,
If everybody's satisfied now, I'd thank you to leave me rest. It puts my heart to jerkin' to talk.
Jody said,
I'll fix its milk, Ma. No need you should bother.
She was silent. He went to the kitchen. The fawn wobbled after him. A pan of morning's milk stood in the kitchen safe. The cream had risen on it. He skimmed the cream into a jug and used his shirt sleeve to wipe up the few drops he couldn't keep from spilling. If he could keep the fawn from being any trouble to his mother, she would mind it less. He poured milk into a small gourd. He held it out to the fawn. It butted it, smelling the milk. He saved it precariously from spilling over the floor. He led the fawn outside to the yard and began again. It could make nothing of the milk in the gourd. He dipped his fingers in the milk and thrust them into the fawn's soft, wet mouth. It sucked greedily. When he withdrew them, it bleated frantically and butted him. He dipped his fingers again, and as the fawn sucked, he lowered them slowly into the milk. The fawn blew and sucked and snorted. It stamped its small hooves impatiently. As long as he held his fingers below the level of the milk, the fawn was content. It closed its eyes dreamily. It was ecstasy to feel its tongue against his hand. Its small tail flicked back and forth. The last of the milk vanished in a swirl of foam and gurgling. The fawn bleated and butted, but its frenzy was appeased. Jody was tempted to go for more milk, but even with his father's backing, he was afraid to press his advantage too far. A doe's bag was as small as a yearling heifer's. Surely the fawn had had as much as its mother could have given it. It lay down suddenly, exhausted and replete. He gave his attention to a bed for it. It'd be too much to ask to bring it into the house. He went to the shed behind the house and cleaned out a corner down to the sand. He went to the live oaks at the north end of the yard and pulled down armfuls of Spanish moss. He made a thick bed in the shed. A hen was on a nest close by. Her bright, beady eyes watched him dubiously. She finished her laying and flew through the door, cackling. The nest was a new one, with 6 eggs in it. Jody gathered them carefully and took them to his mother in the kitchen. He said, "You'll be proud to get these, Ma. Extra eggs."
"It's a good thing there's something extra around to eat."
He ignored the comment. He said,
"The new nest is right next to where I fixed the fawn's bed, in the shed, where it'll not bother nobody."
She didn't answer, and he went outside where the fawn lay under a mulberry tree. He gathered it up and carried it to its bed in the dark shed.
"Now you belong to do whatever I tell you," he said, "like as if I was your mammy. I tell you to lay here till I come get you again."
The fawn blinked its eyelids. It groaned comfortably and dropped its head. He tiptoed from the shed. No dog, he thought, could be more biddable. He went to the woodpile and shaved fine splinters of fat wood for kindling. He arranged the pile neatly. He gathered an armful of blackjack oak and took it to his mother's wood box in the kitchen. He said,
"Was it all right, Ma, the way I skimmed the cream?"
"It was all right,"
he said.
"Fodder wings ailin'."
"Is?"
"Lem wouldn't leave me see him. Lem's the only one as mad at us, Ma, on account of Oliver's gal."
"Uh-huh."
"Millwheel said he'd leave me know and I could slip in sometime and see Fodderwing when Lem ain't around."
She laughed.
"You're talkified as an old woman today."
She passed him on her way to the hearth and touched his head lightly. She said,
"I feel right good myself. I never figured your pa would see daylight today."
The kitchen was filled with peace. There was a clanking of harness. Buck passed through the gate from the field and crossed the road to the lot to put up old Caesar for the noon hour. Jody said,
"I best go help him."
But it was the fawn that drew him from the contentment of the house. He slipped into the shed to marvel at its existence and his possession. When he returned with Buck from the lot, chattering of the fawn, he beckoned him to follow. He said,
"Don't scare him. There he lies."
Buck was not as satisfying as Penny in his response. He'd seen so many of Fodderwing's pets come and go.
"He'll likely go wild and run off," he said, and went to the water shelf to wash his hands before dinner.
A chill came over Jody. Buck was worse than his mother to take away pleasure. He lingered a moment with the fawn, stroking it. It moved its sleepy head and nuzzled his fingers. Buck couldn't know of the closeness. It was all the better for being secret. He left the fawn and went to the basin and washed too. The touch of the fawn had left his hands scented with a faint, grassy pungency. He hated to wash it away, but decided that his mother might not find it as pleasant. His mother had wet and combed her hair for dinner, not with coquetry, but with pride. She wore a clean sacking apron over her brown calico. She said to Buck,
"With only Penny to do, we ain't got the rations plentiful like you folks. But we do eat clean and decent."
Jody looked quickly to see if Buck would take offense. Buck ladled grits into his plate and scooped a hole in the center for the fried eggs and gravy.
"Now, Miss Ory, don't fret about me. Jody and me'll slip off this evening and get you a mess of squirrels, maybe a turkey. I see turkey sign the fur edge of the pea field."
Ma Baxter filled a plate for Penny and added a cup of milk.
"You take it to him, Jody."
He went to his father. Penny shook his head at the plate.
It looked just plain nasty to me, son. Set up there and feed me a spoon of grits and the milk. It wearies me to lift my arm.
The swelling had left his face, but his arm was still three times its normal size, and his breath came heavily. He swallowed a few mouthfuls of the soft hominy and drank the milk. He motioned the plate away.
You getting along all right with your baby?
Jody reported on the moss bed.
You picked a good place. What you fixing to name him?
I just don't know. I want a name as real special.
Buck and Ma Baxter came into the bedroom and sat down to visit. The day was hot and the sun high, and there was no hurry for anything. Penny said,
Jody's in a tight for a name for the new Baxter.
Buck said,
Tell you, Jody, when you see Fodderwing, he'll pick a name. He's got ear for such things. Just like some folks has got a ear for fiddle music, he'll pick your name as Purdy.
Ma Baxter said,
Go eat your dinner, Jody. That spotted fawn has taken your mind off your rations.
The opportunity was choice. He went to the kitchen and heaped a plate with food and went to the shed. The fawn was still drowsy. He sat beside it and ate his dinner. He dipped his fingers in the grease-covered grits and held them out to it, but it only snuffed and turned its head away. He said,
You better learn something besides milk.
The dirt daubers buzzed in the rafters. He scraped his plate clean and set it aside. He lay down beside the fawn. He put one arm across its neck. It didn't seem to him that he could ever be lonely again. Chapter 16. The fawn took up much of Jody's time. It tagged him wherever he went. At the woodpile, it interfered with the swing of his axe. The milking had been assigned to him. He was forced to bar the fawn from the lot, and it stood by the gate, peering between the bars, and bleated until he had finished. He stripped Trixie's teats until she kicked in protest. Each cup full of milk meant more nourishment for the fawn. It seemed to him that he could see it growing. It stood firm on its small legs and leaped and tossed its head and tail. He romped with it until they dropped together in a heap to rest and cool themselves. The days were hot and humid. Penny sweat in his bed. Buck came dripping from the fields. He discarded his shirt and worked naked to the waist. His chest was thick with black hair. The perspiration glistened on it like raindrops on black-dried moss. When she was sure he would not call for it, Ma Baxter washed and boiled the shirt and hung it in the scalding sunshine. She said with satisfaction,
There's that much of him now won't stink.
Buck filled the Baxter cabin until it bulged. Ma Baxter said to Penny,
First sight I catch that beard and chest in the mornings, I take a start for I think a bear's got in the house.
She was appalled at the amount of food he bolted three times a day. She could scarcely complain, since he more than made it up with the work he was doing and the game with which he supplied her. In the week he had been at the clearing, he had worked out the corn, the cow peas, and the sweet potatoes. He had cleared 2 acres of new ground to the west between the pea field and the sinkhole. He had cut down a dozen oaks and pines and sweet gums and innumerable saplings, burned the stumps and trimmed the fallen trees so that Jody and Penny on the cross-cut saw might cut the limbs and trunks for firewood.
You plant sea island cotton on the new ground come spring, and you'll make you a crop.
Ma Baxter said suspiciously,
You always got no cotton.
He said easily,
Us foresters ain't farmers. We'll do the clearing, we'll plow field now and again, but it's our nature to make a living what I reckon you'd call rough and easy.
She said primly,
Rough ways lands folks in trouble.
He said,
You ever know my granddaddy? They called him Trouble Forester.
She could not dislike him. He was as good-natured as a dog. She could only say to Penny in the privacy of night,
He works like a ox, but he's so tormented black.
Ezra, he's black as a buzzard.
It's his beard, Penny said. Did I have a black beard like that?